This is Impeachment, a daily podcast from WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer. It's Friday, November 8th. Today, we'll help you get ready for the first day of public impeachment hearings coming on Wednesday. We'll do this by profiling the first two witnesses, both current Trump administration officials. There's our current top diplomat in Ukraine, William Taylor, and there's George Kent, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State, whose portfolio includes Ukraine. Get ready to see them talk on TV or on your phone. One thing by way of strategic context, it's the Intelligence Committee Democrats who get to make the lineup, and I imagine they have chosen William Taylor and George Kent to bat in the leadoff spot for a reason, so we'll try to find out what that is. And we now have quite a bit of material to work with to answer that question, because the House has now released Taylor's and Kent's closed-door deposition transcripts. They run more than 300 pages each, but don't be intimidated. Our guide for this journey has read the transcripts, so you don't have to. She's written articles on each. She is Natasha Bertrand, national security correspondent for Politico. Natasha, so happy to have you with us. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And we'll get to their content, but can you set what the scene will probably be for us on Wednesday? Where will this happen? Who'll be in the room?
Yeah, so members from the six committees that are pursuing this impeachment investigation, which is the Intelligence Committee, Financial Services Committee, Foreign Affairs, Judiciary, Oversight and Reform, and Ways and Means Committees, they will be present as well as some of their staff members. And the impeachment resolution sets up a structure for the hearings that actually departs from the House's usual practice. So the chair and the ranking member of the Intel Committee will have time at the beginning of the public hearings, potentially as much as 45 minutes each, in which they can ask questions themselves or they can yield to their staff members to question a witness. And those staff members tend to be professional lawyers, for example, who might know exactly how to question a witness to elicit the most relevant information. So the committee will then, after those 45 minutes are up, then they'll move to the regular 5-minute rule, which is a back and forth from Republican to Democrat, which is the usual approach.
So that sounds like we might get something with some actual depth at the beginning of the hearings, not those frustrating for the public 5 minutes of a Democratic member usually shouting their opinion and not much of a response from the witness, followed by 5 minutes of a Republican member shouting their opinion with not much response from the witness. It sounds like there might be some actual extended professional questioning at the beginning, as you describe it.
That's exactly right. And this is actually one of the big reasons why they introduced the impeachment resolution a couple weeks ago. They had to vote because the hearing structure deviates from the current House rule by providing a longer period of uninterrupted questioning. And that was, as you mentioned, in response to the previous hearings, which some critics perceived as kind of a disaster because there was just no momentum and questioning by Democrats or Republicans that started to get somewhere would then be interrupted within 5 minutes. So now this will be less disjointed than the hearings that were initially conducted by the Judiciary Committee over the summer.
Do you happen to know what William Taylor and George Kent look like or how they tend to present? What do you think their optics and communication styles are likely to be if the Democrats have tapped them to go first?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I've never met George Kent or Bill Taylor personally, but they are career diplomats and career foreign service officers, and they are not political people. So I imagine their testimonies will be very straightforward. They will testify as to how all of the shadow foreign policy that was being conducted by Giuliani impacted their ability to do their jobs, not impacted their ability, you know, to serve a political purpose or serve the president in a political way, but actually impacted the day-to-day policymaking. And I think that's why the Democrats wanted them to go first, is because they are, in a way, unimpeachable. I mean, these are people who, so to speak, these are career officers who the Republicans could not. Well, they've tried, but they haven't credibly been able to accuse them of being, quote unquote, never Trumpers or political in that sense. So these are buttoned up, straightforward career officers who I think Democrats are hoping will be able to make a very compelling case to the American people that this was very irregular, what Giuliani and his associates were doing with regard to Ukraine policy.
George Kent, what's his job? It's one of those lost in the bureaucracy, redundant sounding titles, Deputy Assistant Secretary of State. I thought if you're a deputy, you're already assistant. But whatever. What does he do for a living?
So he is one of the top officials in the Bureau of European and Eurasian Affairs at the State Department, which is charged with implementing U.S. foreign policy and promoting U.S. interests specifically in Europe and Eurasia, as the title suggests. So he was appointed in September of 2018, and he's been in the Foreign Service since 92. He's lived and worked extensively in Kiev, and his portfolio now includes Ukraine. And he was essentially in charge of implementing foreign policy through the regular channel, not through the irregular channel that Giuliani and increasingly folks like Kurt Volker and other kind of the three amigos, what they were doing over the last couple months. So he testified that he was feeling like he was cut out of a policy-making channel that he was normally charged with handling.
One notable phrase from his testimony was that Rudy Giuliani was on a, quote, campaign of lies, unquote, about U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch. Does he say what kinds of lies Giuliani was telling about the ambassador?
Yeah, so in May, I believe it was, Rudy Giuliani started telling Ukrainian journalists in interviews that the reason why Ambassador Yovanovitch was recalled was because she was part of efforts against the president, essentially that she was disloyal and that she was also preventing this corrupt former prosecutor that Giuliani really wanted to speak to about the Bidens, et cetera, from obtaining a visa to the U.S. so that they could actually connect. And so this was part of the smear campaign that was launched against Yovanovitch that George Kent and others in the State Department were so eager to push back against, but to no avail. They didn't get any support from Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State, for putting out a statement in support of Yovanovitch. And, you know, Yuri Lutsenko, who's another top prosecutor in Ukraine that Rudy Giuliani was very close to, actually saw Yovanovitch as a threat to his ability to keep his position as it became clear that U.S. officials felt that he was not doing enough to battle corruption. And so kind of in conjunction with Giuliani, they started spreading rumors about how Yovanovitch gave Lutsenko a do not prosecute list, that she was acting politically, that she was out to get the president. And ultimately, because of, you know, a combined fear for her safety and also because of pressure by folks in the State Department, including Mike Pompeo and also Giuliani in this irregular channel, she was recalled early.
But Ken also did testify that he had raised concerns about Hunter Biden in 2015. What did he say about that?
Yeah, so he raised concerns with the vice president's office, actually, about there being a potential conflict of interest because Joe Biden was dealing with Ukraine policy at the time. And Hunter Biden, of course, was serving on the board of this gas company, Burisma, which is based in Ukraine. But Kent actually didn't suggest that Biden himself had done anything wrong, just that there might be an appearance of a conflict of interest, not that there was actually any attempt to act on that. And he says that he was told that the vice president didn't have the bandwidth to deal with it at the time because his other son, Beau, was dying of cancer.
Another thing that jumps out from Kent's testimony is the phrase, there needed to be three words. Can you explain what that refers to?
Yeah, so he told investigators that based on his conversations with other senior American diplomats, the U.S. ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, had actually relayed that Trump wanted nothing less than Zelensky, who's the president of Ukraine, to go to a microphone and say three words, investigations, Biden, and Clinton, and essentially commit to launching these investigations into the Bidens and Hillary Clinton, which at that point was shorthand for interference in the 2016 election and what role Ukraine may have played in propping up Clinton and trying to damage the president's campaign. And their basis for that seems to be, at least in part, the dirt that came out about Trump's campaign manager, Paul Manafort, during the 2016 election that actually led him to resign. And of course, that dirt had to do with his work in Ukraine. So this is kind of a new revelation because we didn't know previously before Kent's testimony that Clinton was one of the words that he wanted Zelensky to use. But it's just further evidence that the president is very preoccupied with having a foreign country go after his political rivals, of, you know, which Clinton is certainly one.
Are George Kent and William Taylor appearing together on Wednesday or sequentially? Do you know?
They are appearing together.
Is one of the reasons that they're going on together and both going on day one because of a written exchange that they had in August between themselves about asking Ukraine for investigations. You wrote up that part of George Kent's testimony.
Yeah, it's certainly possible. I think Democrats really want to have witnesses together that won't contradict each other. And that can, you know, further bolster and corroborate this the story about how Giuliani and his associates were fulfilling the president's desire to have Zelensky publicly commit to launching these investigations. And in his testimony, George Kent was actually asked to read these WhatsApp messages between him and Bill Taylor. And in the messages, Taylor said that he had spoken to a high-level NSC official named Tim Morrison, who claimed that Ambassador Gordon Sondland, again, the U.S. ambassador to the EU, said that Trump asked Zelensky specifically to publicly announce these investigations into Clinton and the Bidens. And so I think that is going to be a big focus of the opening public testimony, because it shows that there were more people who were aware of what Gordon Sondland, Donald Trump, and Giuliani were asking Zelensky to do than just a couple people who the Republicans say are just relying on hearsay.
One unanswered question in this whole story, I think, Natasha, is why Trump decided to release the military aid in September after trying to withhold it until Ukraine announced Biden and Clinton investigations. I see George Kent offered some testimony about that. What can you tell us about any light he shed on the release of the aid?
Yeah, so he actually says he made news in this sense, and he said that part of the reason he thinks that the aid was ultimately released by the president is because he was feeling pressure by certain Republican senators. And those Republican senators include Mitch McConnell, which is very interesting, who apparently called the president and asked about the hold on Ukraine assistance aid just before it was released. So he was getting phone calls and visits and emails from Republican senators who have traveled to Ukraine from the relevant committees and who understand the importance of this military assistance aid to Ukraine fending off Russian aggression in the East and therefore to U.S. national security. And Donald Trump, you know, of course, really needs as much Republican support as he can get. So it was Republican senators essentially finding out that this hold on the aid had been placed from a Politico article, actually. And 10 days later, or 11 days later, the aid was released because of so much bipartisan pressure on the administration to give this money to Ukraine.
Does this back up the theory that they would have kept withholding the aid to Ukraine and tried to get President Zelensky to pay off on that quid pro quo, to announce investigations into Biden and Clinton, et cetera, except that it became clear that this was going to become a public embarrassment because of the whistleblower's complaint?
Oh, yeah. So Zelensky was actually, he had scheduled the CNN interview where he was going to publicly announce that he was launching investigations or revisiting investigations into Burisma, the Bidens, and alleged Ukrainian interference in the 2016 election.
Wait, stop for a second. This is new, right? I'm not sure we knew this until the last day or so. Zelensky actually scheduled an appearance on CNN to announce the investigations that Giuliani and Trump were trying to get him to announce?
Correct. And this was actually reported yesterday by the New York Times, that he had scheduled an interview with Fareed Zakaria on CNN, and it was all set to happen. And then as soon as all of this came out on August 29th, that the hold was there and that and ultimately the cascade of bipartisan pressure that was placed on the administration made it so that it was just unsustainable and that the president had to release the aid. But when the president did release the aid and when it became clear that this was going to snowball, Zelensky and his aides canceled the CNN interview, and it was made clear to them that at this point it would be more damaging for them with the Democrats if they came out and actually said that they were going to investigate this, because Ukraine has always relied on bipartisan support from the United States. And for them to commit to launching these investigations would obviously very much turn off the Democrats. So it was scrapped at the last minute.
Beth in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Natasha Bertrand, Politico national security correspondent. Hi, Beth.
Brian, thank you for taking my call. Natasha, I'm a huge fan of yours. I follow your work very closely. I have a question, and this has been mentioned a number of times, in terms of concern about the physical safety of Maria Yovanovitch, and I think you've mentioned also George Kent. Were they actually concerned that they were going to be physically harmed? I mean, could you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, so actually Marie Yovanovitch says that she continues to be concerned about her safety because of things the president said in the phone call with Zelensky on July 25th, such as she's going to go through some things. Marie Yovanovitch didn't exactly know what that meant, but she took it as a threat. And of course, by that moment, she was already back in the United States. She had been recalled from Ukraine earlier in the spring, but she testified that the State Department did actually ask her to get back on the next plane to Washington because they were trying to preempt a possible tweet from the President of the United States disparaging her. And Ukraine isn't necessarily the safest country in the world. And so she felt like perhaps her well-being could be in jeopardy when, you know, the leader of the free world is tweeting out her name to the entire world and arguing that she is somehow corrupt, disloyal, and not fulfilling the interests of the United States. In the middle of the night, she received a phone call at about 1 a.m. from State Department officials saying, you need to be on the next plane to Washington, because they were so worried that either the president or Rudy Giuliani were going to attack her very publicly and therefore put her safety at risk. So yeah, she continues actually to be concerned about how all the publicity is going to impact her and her family.
And Marie Yovanovitch will be the second day of public hearings witness on Friday of next week, a week from today. So we will preview that on the show before that takes place. But that also brings us to witness number two on day one, Wednesday, William Taylor, because Trump and Rudy and everybody went on this big campaign to get rid of Marie Yovanovitch as our ambassador to Ukraine. And when they did, they replaced her with William Taylor. Why William Taylor, Natasha, since he doesn't seem to have ever been a supporter of their scheme?
Yeah, so Bill Taylor actually served as the ambassador to Ukraine in the past, and he's very familiar, obviously, with Ukraine's culture, and he is very well trusted by Ukrainian government officials. So he was put in place as not necessarily someone who was perceived as a loyalist to the Trump administration by any means, but as someone who at the very least was seen as competent and could reliably execute his duties and responsibilities in this space. They were looking essentially for someone who could have the trust of the Ukrainians, but could also deal with people like Kurt Volker, the special envoy to Ukraine, and of course the U.S. ambassador to the EU, Gordon Sondland, who was deeply involved in Ukraine policy.
One thing that's funny but not funny in Taylor's deposition is that he testified that he actually tried to go through channels to get the president to back off the scheme, but people in the chain of command were not available because they were actually trying to buy Greenland. Really?
He said that there was a lot of preoccupation among the principals on the National Security Council with purchasing Greenland at the time. And I don't think the press fully understood how extensive the conversations were about actually trying to buy Greenland. But George Kent makes it, or Bill Taylor made it clear in his testimony that there was actually no space to discuss what was happening with the Ukraine policy channel and the irregularities in that, because everyone was so worried about either preventing the president from going through with this or facilitating his demand that the United States buy Greenland. So it's pretty crazy.
We have a few minutes left. You're a national security correspondent. Do you expect these witnesses to make a case that U.S. national security was jeopardized in any way by this scheme, or just Ukrainian national security?
No, absolutely. So George Kent, in his testimony yesterday, actually said that he believes that the military assistance aid that the United States provides to Ukraine is actually more in the United States' interest than even in Ukraine's interest. And he caveated that and he said, look, I can't go into this much in public testimony, but I would be happy to expound upon this behind closed doors with the relevant officials from the State Department, the Pentagon, et cetera. But essentially what he was saying was the ability to push back on Russian aggression in Ukraine is key to U.S. national security interests, because as we saw, when we left Russia kind of unchecked, they invaded eastern Ukraine and they annexed Crimea, and they were able to expand their influence in the region significantly. So I think that was a really pivotal moment when George Kent said, I'm happy to go into this behind closed doors, but just so you know, this is actually more pivotal to the U.S. national interest than it is even to the Ukrainians' national interest.
But I don't think people around the country have that. They have that this scheme was putting Ukraine at risk because we weren't giving them the weapons that were approved by Congress. that they wanted to defend themselves against the Russians. But I don't think people are walking around Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Michigan saying, gosh, Trump really put the U.S. at risk just to benefit his own campaign. Do you think they can make that argument?
I think so. And I think they need to focus less on just the corruption angle of this and just the quid pro quo angle of this. And exactly like you said, more on the jeopardy that the country was placed in because of the president's request here, because this is not just something that we do as a favor for the Ukrainians, right? This is something that is in the national security interests of the United States. And I think that no matter what, you know, Trump's base who continue to not believe that Russia interfered in the election and Trump's base who continue to believe that Russian aggression internationally is overblown and that it shouldn't be the United States' problem anyway, they probably will not be convinced by this argument. But for the few people that could potentially swing, for example, you know, a vote in 2020 in favor of the Democrats in the Senate, this could be an argument that they are able to comprehend and are able to see that this wasn't just a political maneuver. This was also Trump playing with the national security interests of the U.S.
All right, listeners, T-minus 5 days to the first televised impeachment hearings. Now you know a little more about the day one witnesses, William Taylor and George Kent. Natasha, where will you be watching from on Wednesday, if you know?
I will be on the Hill. Yeah, I'll be watching live. So,
and we'll be on our phones, on our TVs, on our radios. Natasha Bertrand, national security correspondent for Politico. Thank you so much for explaining so much.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Again, listeners, you can call and ask an impeachment news question. Just leave a voicemail anytime, including your name and where you're calling from, and some of you will hear your questions on the show. The number is 844-745-TALK. That's 844-745-TALK or 844-745-8255. Impeachment, a daily podcast, is excerpted from my live daily radio show, which we also invite you to listen to. It's The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon Eastern Time, streaming live then at WNYC.org. Have a great weekend. Talk to you Monday.